The headlines. Iran's army stages the final phase of its maneuvers, deploying hundreds of indigenous drones in the country's north-central province. Mourners in Pakistan refuse to bury miners killed by Daesh terrorists as they protest for a fourth day demanding better protection. And WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will remain in custody in Britain pending a U.S. appeal of the decision to block his extradition. Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Iran's army has held the final phase of its maneuvers that used hundreds of indigenous UAVs. The military exercises are aimed at organizing and enhancing the preparation of Iran's army in drone combats. Yusuf Jalali has more.
All divisions of Iran's army are engaged in a full-scale war with a simulated enemy. This is the second and final day of the Iranian army drills held in central Iran. There's no direct confrontation, as the Iranian military carries out all its attacks remotely, using these pilotless aircraft. On the last phase of the drill, the army used its surveillance drones to track suspicious activities along its borders, while deploying its combat drones to the conflict area, where they destroyed their targets.
The main focus of attention in this drill was to attack distant hostile targets. As part of the exercise, we flew UAVs from our southern borders where they must target mobile objects in our country's central areas. All of our goals were met in this maneuver.
Iran stepped into the realm of UAVs in 2011 after it captured U.S.'s spy drone RQ-170 on its northeastern borders. It later produced copies of the captured UAV in different sizes, the last of which has an edge over its American peer. It has fighting features as well. But that was not where it ends. Iran's ambitions in the unmanned aircraft got the country to a level where it produces a variety of operational drones. One of the latest is this beast called Muhajir 6, which is a combat drone equipped with two seeker bombs that can lock onto their low-altitude air targets.
Today, Iran is the only regional power in terms of the drone technology. The UAVs that you saw today are made based on cutting-edge technology. Our UAVs are capable of conducting a variety of missions in different ranges and altitudes.
The drill comes as Iran and the U.S. have been engaged in a war of words, raising concerns about a potential conflict. Iran's military officials wrapped the U.S. for, quote, its military adventurism in the Persian Gulf, while pressing that they're prepared for any scenario.
Unfortunately, the U.S. military has recently carried out some provocative movements in the region. It has deployed its long-range aircraft to the region in what it calls a show of power. American officials have also made some accusations against the Islamic Republic. Now, this drill shows the readiness of our armed forces to defend our country's borders from air, land, and sea against any aggression.
Military officials say this drill sends a message of peace and security for regional states, while assuring their neighbors that the Islamic Republic's military doctrine is based on deterrence, not aggression. Iran's army says the drill drew a clear map of its strategies to manage UAV-based attacks and counterattacks in real-time war scenarios. Given the recent trade of threats between Iran and its enemies, the Iranian army says this maneuver sends a strong message that Iran's borders are safer with its drones. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drill.
Iran's defense minister says that there are serious indications of Israel's role in the November assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Amir Hatami said that Israeli intelligence services have a history of direct involvement in similar assassinations in Iran. Made the comments in separate messages to counterparts in 60 countries. The Iranian defense minister called Fakhrizadeh's assassination an inhumane act, said that Iran has the right to hold the perpetrators accountable. Hatami argued that inaction would lead to the repeat of such incidents and insecurity. He also said the global fight against terrorism requires nations to refrain from double standards. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was killed in a terrorist attack near Tehran. The commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed harsh revenge for the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
Our duty is clear. First is to take revenge from the murderers that committed this heinous crime. Their revenge began at the very first moment that they assassinated top resistance commanders, and it will reach its endpoint. But this revenge has several steps. The enemy has been slapped twice and will be slapped two more times in the future. The first was the huge funeral procession that was held for General Soleimani and his comrades. The second was an attack on the U.S. base in Iraq that broke the grandeur of America. The third slap will be when the U.S. hegemony will be defeated. And the last one will be the U.S. withdrawal from the region.
Brigadier General Bani was speaking at a ceremony marking the first anniversary of Soleimani's assassination. The ceremony took place in Soleimani's hometown, Kerman, in southern Iran. Bani said U.S. forces will be crushed first, and then they will be expelled from the West Asia region. He said the perpetrators of the crime will not be safe, even in their own homes. The Iranian commander said the path of General Soleimani will continue. Soleimani was killed in a U.S. drone attack in Iraq last January. A ceremony is underway in Syria to mark the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. Muhammad Ali says that Syrians are paying tribute to Soleimani for his anti-terror efforts and his role in restoring stability to their country.
It's not the first event. There were so many previous events. What Syrians want to say in such events is that they want to express their appreciation and respect for all the efforts that General Soleimani did in Syria in order to defeat Daesh and help them restore stability to so many areas across the country. General Soleimani, of course, was heading all of the Iranian military advisors who were in Syria at the request of the Syrian government, assisting the Syrian army and the Syrian National Defense Forces to defeat terrorism and terrorists in general. And now, General Soleimani personally led so many battles against terrorists, for example, Al-Bukamal in 2017. He managed to lead all of the Syrian troops over there, the Syrian National Defense Forces, the Syrian Army, the Lebanese Resistance Forces movement, Hezbollah, of course, who were fighting all alongside the Syrian side to get rid of Daesh. General Soleimani also helped in restoring security and stability to areas south of Aleppo, areas around Damascus. So the security that the Syrians are living in so many parts across the country, especially in the east, like Deir ez-Zor, also in the north near Aleppo. Thanks to General Soleimani, the security and stability there was restored. General Soleimani helped Syria for long years against terrorism, not just Daesh, all kinds of terrorism that wanted to undermine stability and security in Syria.
The head of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces says that Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, and the Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas defeated the enemies even with their martyrdom.
The night of their martyrdom, they were able to achieve the greatest victory, great victory, to try to move the emotions of the people, to show people to realize how great they were. They were able to revive. Is there much greater than these meanings? Martyrdom is a weapon in order to preserve the nation, preserve peace. This is greater than nuclear weapons. Martyrdom, this is how they defeat their enemies. This is how faithful defeat their enemies through martyrdom.
Fali Al-Fayyad was addressing a ceremony marking the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Soleimani and Mohandas. He held the two commanders for their sacrifices in bringing security to the region. The PMU leader referred the two anti-terror icons to great political and military figures. He underlined that Soleimani and Mohandas were like loyal brothers and they could be role models for youth. General Soleimani and Mohandas were assassinated near Baghdad Airport by a U.S. drone strike ordered by President Donald Trump last January. Iran's ambassador to Vienna-based international organization has warned against the consequences of Israel's clandestine nuclear weapons program. Qasem Gharibabadi issued the warning in a letter to Rafael Grossi, the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency. The letter said the expansion of Israel's secret nuclear program not only poses a serious threat to global security and stability, but also to the effectiveness and efficiency of the NPT and the agency's safeguards regime. He also said that the IAEA should explicitly and categorically call upon Israel to place all of its nuclear materials and facilities under the agency's comprehensive safeguards without any preconditions. Israel has never allowed any inspection of its nuclear facilities and continues to defy international calls to join the NPT. Israel is widely believed to possess up to 200 nuclear warheads. Well, moving on to a statement coming from the Amnesty International, it has lashed out at Israel for denying coronavirus vaccines to Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. It says that the move highlights Israel's institutionalized discrimination. The UK-based rights group says that the regime is legally obliged to provide vaccines to Palestinians. Calls on Tel Aviv to stop ignoring its international obligations as an occupying power and must ensure that COVID vaccines are equally and fairly distributed. Last month, Israel began the vaccination process covering its own population, including settlers in the occupied territories. However, it excluded the nearly 5 million Palestinians living under the occupation and blockade. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Health Ministry says that Palestinians will be vaccinated through the UN-backed COVAX program. However, the ministry said that it would struggle to store the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in the requisite sub-zero conditions. Members of the Shia Hazar community in Pakistan's Balochistan province continue their protest for a fourth day over the Daesh-claimed brutal killing of 11 minors. Protesters slammed the killing as a systematic ethnic cleansing of Hazaras in Balochistan. They accused security forces of doing nothing to protect them. The demonstrators have blocked the road in the provincial capital of Quetta with the coffins of slain miners. They are refusing to bury the victims until the demands are met, which include the resignation of the provincial government. People have also held a protest in the port city of Karachi to condemn the killing. On Sunday, Daesh terrorists brutally killed the miners in a residential compound near a coal mine. Hundreds of Hazaras have been killed over the last decade in gun and bomb attacks in Pakistan. Javed Rana is our correspondent joining us from Islamabad. All right, Javed, first of all, to begin with, tell us the gruesome murder of these 11 miners, where it took place, and if you have any information as to why it took place and why they were targeted.
Well, it is basically a pattern of violence against the Hazara community in Balochistan province. Wherever they find them, their members are, by their face features, they have a distinction, and they can easily be identified. So these miners, unfortunately, became target of the of what appears to be a sectarian violence to begin with. That is an internal factor. But I think this incident has a broader picture. And broader picture is that since these kind of incidents have repeatedly happened, and therefore the frustration among the Hazara community is growing. A significant number of the Hazara community members, they have left Pakistan because of the security threats and because of the killing of their family members. So the point I'm trying to make is that given the fact that there have been repeated incidents, now they are refusing to bury down their loved ones. They are saying that until the Prime Minister himself comes over there and gives them assurance. And I think this is a demand way upon which the Prime Minister has reacted, and he is saying he has given assurance to the Hazara community members that he is going to visit them soon, but now it is a time to bury their loved ones because it is very difficult for them to stay in a cold weather conditions, and they have been there on the roads for last couple of days. Now their concern is that if they bury their loved ones, how to prevent similar incidents from being happened in Balochistan province where Hazara community is based. So let's see how things unfold. Prime Minister has sent his interior minister, who has given them assurance that the killers would be arrested. But unfortunately, since these Daesh terrorists are transnationals, they are not confined to a particular community in Pakistan. Finding them is something easier said than done. But generally, they have a back and forth movement to Afghanistan, which shares Pakistan's borders from the Balochistan province. So I think it will take time for the security forces to crack them down. They have the sleeper cells in Pakistan. they have camouflaged themselves in the communities. So it will certainly take time.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. Jumping around, our correspondent there from Islamabad. Bahrain's top Shia cleric and Ayatollah Sheikh Isa Qassam has lashed out at the Al-Khalifa regime for curtailing freedom in the kingdom. In a statement, Sheikh Qassam accused the Bahraini regime of stifling the voices of people and violating their right to freedom of expression. Cleric said the Bahrainis face the most severe forms of punishment for expressing their opinions. He described the kingdom as an oversized prison filled with smaller prisons that strip people of their freedom and rights. However, Qassam declared that righteousness will eventually prevail. Bahrainis have witnessed widespread crackdowns since the popular uprising in 2011. Manama has since killed hundreds of activists, detained thousands, and sent many of them into exile or revoked their citizenship. Bahraini authorities also stripped Sheikh Isa Qassam of his citizenship in 2016. The British court denies bail to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange as he awaits the outcome of a U.S. appeal of the decision to block his extradition. The judge in charge of the case said that there is a possibility that Assange could abscond. Australian journalists had requested bail after the judge ruled on Monday that he should not be returned to the U.S. Washington appealed the sentence. Assange is accused of illegally hacking into U.S. government websites and leaking documents containing logs on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Washington claims the leaks broke the law and endangered lives. Assange and his legal team have long argued that the case is politically motivated. He has spent the last 8 years trying to avoid being transferred to the U.S., where he faces espionage charges. Democrats are on the path to victory in the Senate runoff elections in the U.S. state of Georgia, with approximately all the votes counted. U.S. media have projected Democrat Raphael Warnock as the winner of one of the two runoffs against Republican Senator Amy Loeffler. In the other contest, Democrat John Ossoff has claimed victory over the incumbent Republican David Perdue. The outcome of the Georgia elections will determine which party would gain control of the Senate. Republicans need the victory of either of their candidates to preserve their majority in the Senate. Democrats, however, must gain control over both seats to capture a majority in both houses of the U.S. Congress. U.S. prosecutors in the state of Wisconsin have cleared a white police officer of criminal charges in the shooting of African-American Jacob Blake. Court ruled that Officer Rustin Shesky acted in self-defense in the shooting, said that Blake was armed with a knife and had resisted arrest. The incident occurred on August 23, after police responded to a domestic dispute call. Shesky shot Blake 7 times at close range in the presence of his children. He was paralyzed from the waist down. The incident caused widespread anti-racism protests across the U.S. The shooting took place as anger was boiling over police brutality after another black man, George Floyd, was choked to death in May. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The pardoning of 4 Blackwater mercenaries by U.S. President Donald Trump was an action that violated international law, a group of experts at the United Nations said recently. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Chris Walker Ryder. This article is published under the heading, UN Experts Say Trump violated international law in pardoning Blackwater mercenaries. Here's the details of this article. The pardoning of four Blackwater mercenaries by U.S. President Donald Trump was an action that violated international law, a group of experts at the United Nations said recently. Trump pardoned the four contractors, including Nicholas Sladen, who was convicted of first-degree murder, as well as Paul Slough, Ivan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd, all three who were convicted of voluntary and attempt manslaughter. As part of more than a dozen pardons and commutations, those contractors were convicted for opening fire on a crowd and killing a number of individuals in 2007 in what has become known as the Nisour Square Massacre in Baghdad, Iraq. 17 unarmed Iraqi citizens were killed in total. The youngest victim in that shooting, Ali Kenani, was just 9 years old when he was killed by the four Blackwater contractors. His father, Muhammad Kenani, recounted the scene he witnessed when the massacre happened. Muhammad Kenani said, "When one man tried to run, they shot him," Kenani said in a Democracy Now! Interview from 2010. He dropped dead on the spot. He was on the ground, bleeding, and they were shooting nonstop. They shot like they were trying to kill everyone they could. Due to how vicious and criminal these men's actions were, members of the UN condemned Trump's decision to pardon them, describing his actions as criminal while doing so. Pardoning the Blackwater contractors is an affront to justice and to the victims of the Nisour Square massacre and their families. Jelena Aparak, chair of a UN working group on the use of mercenaries, said recently of Trump's pardoning of the four Blackwater contractors, "The President of the United States has tremendous leeway when it comes to whom they may pardon." However, many scholars believe there are still limits to the pardon power, particularly when it comes to consideration for other laws, including international agreements and treaties, which are treated as the supreme law of the land according to the U.S. Constitution. In that respect, it's possible that Trump violated the Geneva Conventions when he pardoned these four individuals, as member states to that agreement are responsible for holding war criminals in their own country accountable for their actions. Private contractors or mercenaries are included in those Geneva Conventions agreements. There are grave consequences, according to those agreements, for not adhering to this rule. Ignoring or curtailing punishments for war criminals will likely encourage other nations, for instance, to hire private contractors in order to break the spirit of the international agreement. With that in mind, the pardons are in violation of U.S. obligations under international law and will undermine humanitarian law and human rights at a global level, Aparak, the UN expert, said. Ensuring accountability for such crimes is fundamental to humanity and to the community of nations, Aparak elaborated, adding that pardons, amnesties, or any other forms of exculpation for war crimes open doors to future abuses when states contract private military and security companies for inherent state functions. Marjorie Kahn, Professor Emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and Deputy Secretary General of the International Association of Democratic Lawyers, expressed similar sentiments. Kahn, speaking directly to the reporters about the matter, also said that Trump should have pardoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange for his role in revealing other atrocities of U.S. military in the years past. The Geneva Conventions require that the states hold war crimes criminals accountable, Kahn said, yet Trump pardoned four war criminals, but indicted Julian Assange for revealing evidence of U.S. war crimes and criminals in Iraq. Kahn continued, Assange published the collateral murder video, which depicts U.S. troops killing 18 civilians in violation of the Geneva Conventions. Trump should dismiss the indictment against Assange and grant him a full pardon.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
¶¶
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: يوم المظلوم على الظالم أشد من يوم الظالم على المظلوم.
Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salam said, "The day of the oppressed over the oppressor will be severer than the day of the oppressor over the oppressed."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Now, one of the profound things which we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, is this fact that there are certain unique and special people whom Allah truly loves, and they deserve the love of Allah for their actions and their endeavor on the path of Allah, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala endows them with special and unique knowledge. One of these kinds of knowledge is the knowledge of the unseen, or the knowledge of events that will happen. So talking about Imam Ali's knowledge about the unseen, we find that Jandab ibn Abdullah Azdi reports, a horse rider who informed Imam Ali of the situation in the front, coming to Ali, said, "The Khawarij have crossed the Nahrawan River." Imam Ali said, "They have not crossed the river yet." The man said, "By Allah, they have crossed it." Imam Ali said, "They have never crossed the river." A second man came, reporting what the first man had said, adding, "I saw them crossing the river." Again, Imam Ali says, "By Allah, they have not crossed the river, for all of them except a few will be killed here," while referring to their killing place. Jandab ibn Abdullah Azdi reports, "I took an oath in my heart to be the first one to fight Ali if what the reporters say is true, and otherwise I will be among Imam Ali's army if they are wrong." He says, "We then went to the front with Ali to discover the truth. It was there that I found out that what Imam Ali had said was true, for they had not crossed the river, and eventually all of them, except a few, were killed." We find two very interesting lessons here from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. One, again, is the fact that one who has knowledge of the unseen, one who has knowledge about things which are to happen, this is the kind of person that should be followed and we should follow in our lives. And the next thing is regarding Jandab, where he says, "I took an oath in my heart that if what Imam Ali was saying was untrue, I would fight him, but if he was speaking the truth, I would follow him." An interesting point here is that if he was a true follower of Imam Ali, he should have never questioned the position and the truth and the right of Imam Ali alayhi salam. If we are following Imam Ali, then we should believe and have certainty in Imam Ali alayhi salam. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by none other than the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
كل صبح وكل شراب أيام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق أيام قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
Muslim and Shia, or Mu'min and Ja'fari. We have to realize, and I think that is the message we have to understand from this, is that these names are very important names. They are our mark of identity. But these names come with certain demands upon us. And that is what, you know, we have to understand here, that when we look at the statements that we have from our imams, yes, the Quran, the hadith of the Prophet, the sayings of our a'imma, sometimes they point out our weaknesses, not because they are condemning us, rather they want us to reach to higher levels of Islam, Iman, and Tashayyu. We believe that these, you know, concepts, Islam, Iman, and Tashayyu, they are levels. And a true follower of Ahlul Bayt will not stop at one level. He will constantly try to improve and advance himself or herself to higher levels. The purpose of Azaf, Sayyidul Shuhada, is nothing but this. We talk about the hadith that the Imam said that there are 10 darajat of Iman. Salman was on the 10th level, Abu Zar on the 9th, Miqdad on 8th. Where are we? Is it minus zero? Or is it first? If it is first, we have to move to the second one. If it is second, we have to move to the third one. This hadith is not only to praise Salman and Abu Zar and Miqdad. Remember, they were not masoom, they were like us. We are not talking about the darajat of Iman of Ali and Ali Ali. You know, they are not the issue of darajat there. Rather, loving them, believing in them, and following them takes us to level at different levels in darajat. And so this darajat are not for the a'imma. This darajat are for us. And this is where we have to realize that when we look at the name, you know, look at the reality and the demand of the name Muslim, the name Mu'min, the name Shia, and the name Ja'fari.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Capitol has mobilized the National Guard ahead of planned protests by Donald Trump's supporters in the lead-up to the congressional vote affirming Joe Biden's election victory. Donald Trump's supporters are planning to rally on Tuesday and Wednesday, 5th and 6th of January, seeking to bolster the president's unproven claims of widespread voter fraud. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has requested hundreds of National Guard members to help marshal protests expected around Joe Biden's inauguration. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at The Guardian, with contribution from the Associated Press. The piece is titled, Trump Protesters Warned Not to Carry Guns as Washington, D.C. Calls Up National Guard. Stay with us for more. The U.S. Capitol has mobilized the National Guard ahead of planned protests by Donald Trump's supporters in the lead-up to the congressional vote affirming Joe Biden's election victory. Donald Trump's supporters are planning to rally on Tuesday and Wednesday, 5th and 6th of January, seeking to bolster the president's unproven claims of widespread voter fraud. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has requested hundreds of National Guard members to help marshal protests expected around Joe Biden's inauguration. Washington, D.C. police have posted signs throughout downtown warning that carrying any sort of firearm is illegal, and its acting police chief, Robert Conti, asked residents to warn authorities of anyone who might be armed. There are people intent on coming to our city armed, Robert Conti said on Monday. It comes as Enrique Tarrio, leader of the violent far-right group The Proud Boys, was arrested in Washington, D.C. and charged with destruction of property related to a previous pro-Trump protest and a firearms offense. President Donald Trump has repeatedly encouraged this week's protest and hinted that he himself may get personally involved. Over the weekend, he retweeted a promotion for the rally with the message, I will be there, historic day. The rallies are planned to coincide with the official congressional vote on Wednesday, 6th of January, to certify the Electoral College votes from the November presidential election and declared Joe Biden as the winner. A newly elected congresswoman raised the issue of firearms in the Capitol on Sunday, pledging to carry her handgun in Congress. Republican Lauren Boebert from the town of Rifle, Colorado, was reminded by Robert Conte that she would be subjected to the same penalties as anyone else that's caught on the Washington, D.C. streets carrying a firearm. As downtown Washington, D.C. businesses boarded up their windows, Mayor Muriel Bowser requested a limited National Guard deployment to help bolster the Metropolitan Police Department. During a press conference on Monday, 4th of January, Muriel Bowser asked that local residents stay away from downtown D.C. and avoid confrontations with anyone who is looking for a fight. But she warned, "We will not allow people to incite violence, intimidate our residents, or cause destruction in our city." According to a U.S. defense official, Muriel Bowser put in a request on New Year's Eve to have National Guard members on the streets from Tuesday to Thursday to help with the protests. The official said the additional forces will be used for traffic control and other assistance, but they will not be armed or wearing body armor. Some 340 D.C. National Guard members will be activated, with about 115 on duty in the streets at any given time, said the Defense Department official, who provided details on condition of anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. The official said National Guard members will be used to set up traffic control points around the city and to stand with district police officers at all of the city's metro shops. Robert Conte said Guard troops will also be used for some crowd management. Conte added, "Some of our intelligence certainly suggests there will be increased crowd sizes." Because Washington, D.C. does not have a governor, the designated commander of the city's National Guard is Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy. Any Washington, D.C. requests for National Guard deployments have to be approved by him. The defense official said that there will be no active duty military troops in the city, and the military will not provide any aircraft or intelligence. The Washington, D.C. Guard will provide specialized teams that will be prepared to respond to any chemical or biological incident. But the official said there will be no D.C. Guard members on the National Mall or at the Capitol. Previous pro-Donald Trump rallies and protests, police have sealed off Black Lives Matter Plaza itself, but the confrontations merely spilled out to the surrounding streets. Robert Conte said on Monday, sealing the area again was a very real possibility, but said that decision would depend on the circumstances. "We know that historically, over the last few demonstrations, that Black Lives Matter Plaza has been a focal point," Conte said. "We want to make sure that that is not an issue." The National Park Service has received three separate applications for pro-Donald Trump protests on Tuesday and Wednesday, 5th and 6th of January, with estimated maximum attendance at around 15,000 people, according to spokesman Mike Litters. On Monday, a stage was being assembled for one of the protests on the Ellipse, just south of the White House. Organizers plan to rally on Tuesday evening and again all day on Wednesday, 6th of January, including a 1 p.m. march to the Capitol. Expected attendees include high-level Trump supporters such as Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Republican strategist Roger Stone, a longtime Donald Trump devotee whose 3-year prison sentence was commuted by the president. Roger Stone was convicted of repeatedly lying to Congress during the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. During pro-Trump protests on 12th of December, at least 2 local black churches had Black Lives Matter banners torn down and set ablaze. Robert Conti said the hate crime investigation into those incidents was ongoing and that his officers would be out in force around churches to prevent similar incidents from happening.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المأسومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. The listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. As mentioned previously, we as human beings strive for perfection, and only place that according to Islamic theology that we can attain those perfections is in paradise. And obviously the extreme vices and extreme punishments obviously in the hellfire, the opposite of it. Imam Baqir alayhi salam has a very beautiful tradition. If you have to just pay attention to the words, the Imam says that paradise is surrounded by trials and patience. And the word that the Imam uses is mahfufa. Mahfufa means a complete surrounding. It is covered in it. So basically, if you want to enter it, you have to go through it. So in order for a person who wants to get to paradise, he has to go through this trial and this, and with patience. So the Imam continues and says, paradise is surrounded by trials and patience. So whoever endures trials in the world, obviously enduring here means those trials that will come to you, you have to have patience in it, enduring it, forbearing it at times as well. In this world will enter paradise. Then Imam continues and uses the word for Jahannam as well, mahfufa. And it says hell is surrounded by pleasures and desires. So for example, if you yourself dive into these pleasures and desires of this world, obviously then you know where your abode will be. However, it must be stressed upon you that what is meant by pleasures and desires as those illegitimate, or those pleasures and desires that we have as human beings, but we do not, you know, go about solving them or attaining them by means of the Shar, by means of the divine law, by means by which the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and the Imams have told us to go via. So thus the Imam continues, whoever allows himself its pleasures and desires of this world will enter into the fire. So here we see it's quite clear that in order for a person to enter into paradise, the Imam is saying that you have to go through trials and patience. That is not something that you can gain for free. It is going to happen to you. As we mentioned in one of our previous episodes, that the dua, oh Allah, do not give me trials and tribulations, is an incorrect dua. It's an incorrect supplication. Rather, we should pray, oh Allah, give me the ability to pass these trials and tribulations. Or give me trials and tribulations that I have the ability to pass. And again, on the opposite, or rather on the flip side, we see the fire of hell is surrounded and is covered by those illegitimate and illicit pleasures and desires, that if we surround ourselves and dive and drown ourselves in it, that the only place that we are going, na'udhu billah, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala protect us all from it, is the fire of hell and that punishment that is awaiting those who have disobeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to enter into His eternal bliss of paradise and to take us away from the fire and eternal damnation. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
The debate.